The wife agreed to this, because it could be said that she herself believed that he would be better off in a hospital and that, as well, there they could cure him of that illness which she supposed was mental. He remained there 4 months until he was released apparently cured. He convalesced in his house in, for a month, more or less. It was in Kwartla, where his disappearance occurred 2 years later. Of that which the Sra. Rescued from the house, little remains in her hands. Some days before, neighbors of the place saw him conversing excitedly with a man of mature age, but of healthy, vigorous appearance. On the day of his disappearance, he wore a pullover shirt, shorts, and tennis shoes, without socks. The last time he was seen was with a newspaper in hand, seated on a bench in the park that was a few streets from his residence. He wore no watch, and no important amount had been withdrawn from the bank for nearly a week. Nor did he say goodbye to his 12-year-old daughter when he adored, and he failed to keep the appointment with a friend to play chess. In the final years, his relations with his wife were tyrannical, but not the same with his children, to whom he gave priority of importance. His wife affirmed that in those last months he carried on a life rather leaning toward a philosophy almost pure Tibetan. At first his wife did not worry, because on occasions the professor went out without advising her, though this time, he didn't even say anything to his daughter. A day passed, too, and on the third she told the police. The investigators asked her why she had not given them notice before. She argued that his interests had been very distant and that she participated in almost nothing of his experiences. Nevertheless, she became the principal suspect. But since they could not find the body, they could not proceed against her. And of course this made her accumulate more resentment against her husband. She returned to Mexico City in the automobile of her husband 15 days after she had planned. Apparently she was by now living apart from him. Since then she has wanted to talk to absolutely nobody about the affair. I spoke with her daughter, and she commented to me that sometimes her father, in a somber tone, had told her that he knew too much about aspects that involved some risk, but she never understood what he tried to say about this. The discussions with her, Zther with Sra. Fernandez, were really long, in clear language, both of us expounding our points of view. I told her, yes, I believed in UFOs, because the professor had convinced me of them, and that many contactees obtained interesting information about beings from other planets. I described to her the manner in which I had known her husband and how all the conversation about life on other worlds had developed. She resisted the belief that living beings exist outside of the Earth. She did not believe that Lyra could be extraterrestrial. She is sure that this deals with a terrestrial woman. She told me that she would look for the papers that remained, though I do not know if she will find them, because she demonstrated reserve in some respects. I do not want to compromise myself with her over the writings of the professor, supposing that it might be due to the fact that she still continues her investigation. Nevertheless, despite my insistence, I did it subtly and always left a little of the decision to her. She asked me not to interfere in the investigations, because I could make myself suspect. I saw that she was afraid, since her husband had disappeared under circumstances outside of normal. I told her of the advances I had already made toward the book and tried to convince her to help me with a photograph of the professor. That infuriated her. She told me I was trying to take advantage of the situation. She begged me that if I made a book, I should not mention even the professor, nor his children, much less her. But taking this case at a personal level, I will continue investigating, though this would be at my expense. On the other hand, I know that you have doubts, because the difference is that I knew the professor and was also very close to him on this, while you only have my word, a very weak instrument. Nevertheless, I who knew him, learned much from him about the UFO phenomenon, notwithstanding the fact that he was a confirmed skeptic. These last months in which I reopened the book, project, my notes and some other things, excite me about the edition. I have learned a great many more things, but I believe that I have learned also that the Sra. Fernandez has good reason in defense of her way of thinking. The disappearance of the professor brings me to suspect the circumstances in which all this developed. I want to believe that his interplanetary friends have invited him to pass 2 days, a week, a month, at least some time, with them, but considering that in space the time and this collapse together, can we presume that the professor would return within various dozens of years, or perhaps he will never return, or perhaps he has returned further remembering absolutely nothing. I will send you all I can about Lia, sometime after the 3rd of April. This is all for now, Mr. Wendell. I wish you much success. /S/Zta Rodriguez, P.S. On the other hand, if you consider that the history of the professor is not duly documented, we can wait for me to find the material that is lacking. I am in no hurry to publish the book. Though I can well tell you that the time when we will have an extraterrestrial invasion is near. I don't want you to look like a fool on my part only because I send you what I have. I have many things more but need to know what to send you, it is in shorthand. However, if you believe that it is not sufficiently interesting, I do not want to caprinize the publication. About Dalajandra, I will send you concrete data, address, and if you can photograph, okay? And letter. As you can see, there is much unresolved in this case, and a great deal of mystery still unexplained. Zta and Stevens have themselves become involved to the extent that they too have become a part of this bizarre affair. Let us hope that Sra. Hernandez can find Professor Hernandez's last written notes or papers, and that there is some clue in there to tell us whether Hernandez expected to be picked up and taken away or not. This might be instrumental in clearing Sra. Hernandez of the suspicion she is under with the police. If the police investigators have those papers in the ones they took from the Hernandez house, and they refuse to release them, or copies, back to Sra. Hernandez, we may never be able to clear her of the heavy pool of unwarranted suspicion. So now we learn that the professor did not disappear from the institution as previously supposed, but that he was released and went to his home in Cuautla, where he was now living apparently separated from his wife, at least temporarily. He had given no indication that he planned to leave, and said no goodbyes. He just disappeared as though he had dropped from the face of the earth, and perhaps he has. Part 13, Conclusion. It seems to this publisher that the most fitting conclusion to this report is in fact a letter to Wendell Stevens, answering some of his very challenging questions and candidly stating her deepest personal convictions on the part of Zta Rodriguez. The investigative journalist who spent the most time of all people in the world on this case, who befriended Professor Hernandez when he needed a knowledgeable listening ear, and who carried out extensive interviews with him over years, taking down scores of notebooks full of shorthand dialogue, commentary, and even dictated opinions, statements and memoranda. She also became directly involved in the case she was investigating, when the extraterrestrial trial woman invited her to accompany the professor on one of the visits to the ET ship. Zta is now finding all doors closed on this strange UFO contact case. The federal investigators refuse to divulge the results of their investigation. The family's private investigators will not release what they know about the case. And between the two investigation efforts, and their searches and confiscation of notes, memoranda and papers left by Professor Hernandez, little survives besides the stack of shorthand notebooks. This letter dated the 11th of August 1988 reveals those true inner feelings about this case, and even a little about the real Zta herself. There is no doubt that Zta is personally convinced of the reality and validity of this Mexican UFO contact case. She had come to accept some of the information communicated to the professor by his ET contacts, and could understand his deteriorating sense of hopelessness for this planet and its inhabitants. She is concerned that the extraterrestrial woman may be right, and that we have gone too far in our folly, and have made ourselves prey to other less benevolent beings from the depths of space. She thinks our danger is very real and that we must get this word out as soon as possible, so that the public may be forewarned in the hope that we can do something about the forecast situation. Here then is Zta's letter. Normal font, link, Mexico, DF. The 11th of August 1988, Esteed Mr. Wendell, excuse me for not having written before, but I have continued investigations concerning the last days of Professor Hernandez. First I want to respond to your kind letters whose answer is behind, With respect to your letter of 8 March, I had told you that I would look for more notes on the writing about Kodiak, but I have found no more than that much I had sent on this detail. I tried again to interview Mrs. Hernandez, wife of the professor, but she wants to know nothing of me and does not want to talk to me. Her children refuse to discuss anything about their father. An investigation continues concerning a suspected murder, and obviously they hate all people who become interested in this case. I went to the National University, but they told me that not one page remained on his, Professor Hernandez, assignment there, since they only save papers for 5 years, after which they are microfilmed and sent to the General Archives, but there they do not give out data, unless you carry sus express solicitation, and if it is of legal or educational type. I visited Lic. Silanon Gutierrez. I had introduced the professor to him in 1979. They were both talking about their mutual experiences when Senior Solanum, it was, who said he was a contactee, and affirmed having known an extraterrestrial being called Garibi, who was 2 meters and 50 centimeters tall. At that time Professor Hernandez wanted to get acquitted with other people who, like he, had had some experience of this kind, and I introduced them. On that date both were conversing about their experiences, though I can tell you that the professor stimulated Lic Salomon to speak more about his experiences, limiting himself to listening. Lic Salomon remembers Professor Hernandez very well, and told me that he was available to talk about his chats with him whenever you desire. Concerning a question you asked about, whether the professor had read anything any time about Mia, I can tell you that at that time neither he nor I had much knowledge about the UFO phenomenon. I, for example, felt really disconcerted when they offered me the directorship of the magazine Revisia of Ni, because I was absolutely ignorant about all concerning UFOs. In 1978, 1 year later I met the professor, but I had searched out the manner of obtaining facts on UFOs, however I had never obtained information about Mia, until much time later. I believe that if the professor had known of Mia, he would have gone directly to Switzerland to meet him, because he was in Denmark in the beginning of the 80s, and also traveled to Paris, thus to him it would not have been difficult to travel there to meet him, but he, the professor, never had any knowledge of him, Mia. Concerning what Mia said about his book, Coming to Mexico, I never heard of it, moreover I don't know that there was any kind of publicity about it, and it likely would have been sold only in bookstores exclusively for the sale of books by foreigners, if there was one here. Before his experience with Laya, he never read about such things, due to the fact that in Mexico, there appeared a magazine called Duda, Doubt, and another titled Contatios Extraterrestres. When I asked him why he had not gone to the publishers of those magazines, and why was he telling me, he said he thought that those magazines published only things of fiction, and that he had considered me because I was a journalist and the other's number. I asked him many times how one could tell if a person was telling the truth or was lying about his experiences with extraterrestrials. Then he made this observation: the emotions reflect it, and through the eyes, look at them directly, while listening to the narrative. And through the voice, listen for breaks in the words. A real contactee finds it difficult to disguise the emotion which charges him when he relives his experience. The eyes do not lie. Under this perspective I interviewed at that time various contactees. None of them spoke to me like the professor, including coming to observe in his looks a very special brilliance. I met people who said they were contactees, and who seemed to have learned by memory what they said, and could repeat it time and again. The professor was different every time he narrated some remembered details, things, events, and it was as if reviewing his experience would bring up more interesting things. I remember also having seen him weep one time, of emotion, upon remembering his trips on the ship, and he wrote a small note in his diary, almost the last, which said this: "Once we left the orbit of Earth, I looked at the blue planet and felt as if in some manner, the space that surrounds us had newly conceived me. I felt an injection of vigor inside me, as if suddenly I had been changed into another man. I felt like I had been born again, but not at a physiological level so much as at a mental level. My mind expanded and the concept that I held of the cosmos grew in such a manner that I felt a little alone before such planetary and my own pride disappeared before such grandiosity. I don't know how to define this exactly, but at that moment it seemed to me that man is not of his own mental dimension. Man is much more than a simple body that only lasts a few years. We have become parasites who gobble up one another, and worse still, devour a planet that does not belong to us. We destroy not only our exterior, but also our interior because we do not have the courage to look up above and see before us that vastness of our own small universe. As thinking beings, we have a great opportunity for prodigious reach through our minds. We will soon have the great opportunity to encounter an intergalactic society coming all the time closer to us. In fact, they are already here. And we seem indifferent. As if we do not want to acknowledge their existence. Our minds, nevertheless, denies expansion to conceive the knowledge that we must bring to the category of intelligent men, with which these extraterrestrial races could establish relations with easily. But we are losing this opportunity in some corner of our limited brain. For which, though I am only a grain of sand in this immensity of space, I propose to reach a position of mental vibration beyond on feelings, and finally coming to know how small is the humanity who lives enveloped in a mental greatness that he still does not perceive. How marvelous the universe is. It is a pity that we are losing the opportunity to know infinite new roads. The professor wrote in those last days notes like this, and I felt that in the course of time he had attained a special sensitivity through a cosmic consciousness, concerning the existence of the human being. He came to understand the futility of war and the great lacks, not only economically, but socially as well, affecting the human being. For that, for the grandness of feelings the professor showed in those last days, it pains me to think that people like me dare to opinion so lightly, and to doubt a man he knows nothing about, nor could he even try to say that the professor is lying. Is it because he doubts his own experience and the possibility that it has existed so long? Is it that he has had no real contact, and for that doubts that others have had them? Because the professor said there are more human beings on the Earth who have had extraterrestrial contacts, and he affirmed that he was not the only one. How did he come to know of one such Billy in the manner in which he knew him? For that, and through your letters I have meditated much in this respect. The idea that the experience of the professor must be compared to a book of theories by Billy, seems to me unjust, for how much really are the two things opposite? I who knew the professor, know that he would never have doubted the words of Billy, because he himself lived his own experience and did not doubt that others also would have had an experience of the same type. To him it did not seem impossible nor incredible, because to him had occurred something outside of the common. Then why not accept that others also have lived same thing special, something outside of the common? I have nothing against Billy, nor am I a UFO authority to judge. It is simply my humble opinion that if he did not know Professor Hernandez, he could opinion absolutely nothing about him. However, that which I have seen about Mia and his experience surprises me. Some years ago I was sent a cassette and there I had the opportunity to know you, Senior Wendell. I have saved it because much of what it says has come to confirm that extraterrestrial beings have always been on our planet, nothing more than even those same contactory deny that others have had the same experiences so as not to obscure their own events. Concerning whether the experience of Professor Hernandez is or is not a lie, hoax, time itself will tell us, if it is not that we already have of evidence of intentions of invasion. The same professor spoke of a chemical war that would be brought or be faced with extraterrestrial races, and this we are already coming to. With respect to the question in your last letter sent on the 17th of July, which I must tell you I received only yesterday, for which I have not written, but you ask me if the Senora Hernandez had returned me any more information. No, she has returned me nothing, and nobody except those nearest relatives have access to the information on the investigation. I have thought, and am convinced, that the professor merits separate mention apart, concerning his history. I also would like to see the book ended. May I ask one extra favor? Please mention my complete name, Sir Arrigues Montiel, to see if through this, sometime, In same place, the professor will see it and write me or try to get into contact with me, okay? This is all for now, without other particular, I say goodbye. Sincerely, is Zta Rodriguez. That personal letter to a fellow researcher is very revealing in that it expresses the individual honesty and good faith of a dedicated person diligently seeking the truth herself. She is dismayed and piqued at the audacity of anybody challenging the sincerity and integrity of a most responsible and highly respected man, a veritable pillar of truth in his country before he began to reveal his experiences with the extraterrestrials. And Zta is in fact justified, because how can anybody judge the realities of another without undertaking an in-depth on-site investigation of all the facts in the case? We are far more inclined to read the facts for ourselves than to accept the unsupported pronouncements of anybody else, and we recommend this to all. This then is the bizarre story of Professor R. N. Hernandez of Mexico, who disappeared without a trace in the middle of this investigation, and who has not turned up anywhere since. Publisher. Part 14. Professor Hernandez reflects. After considerable reflection upon what Lia had told me, I began a search for literature referring to the unidentified flying objects. I analyzed the data concerning such contacts worldwide with great curiosity to see if anyone else, in the whole world, had suffered an experience similar to mine. From then on I have been writing to groups studying the extraterrestrials in the United States as much as in Europe. I understood that since those same groups had, perhaps unconsciously, established guidelines for such things, they would examine for themselves all kinds of sightings of ships of extraterrestrial appearance. They spoke much about the credibility of the extraterrestrial contacts and speculated concerning the truth or falsehood of such cases. And this was influenced by many factors. One of them they referred to as plasma physics. I did not know much about what that was, but I immediately began to familiarize myself with it, and I discovered that it only referred to extraterrestrial ships and balls of light whose characteristic was that of a form of stable plasma. Such luminous phenomena had been reported as UFOs. Luminous balls that later were recorded in the annals of laboratories were created as masses of partly ionized air. The masses of air completely ionized were forms of stable plasma. What was curious, was that nobody was able to seriously offer a rebuttal in turn to the question. There were accounts that referred to extraterrestrial beings who entered into contact with terrestrial people, but, for some reason, very few of those cases were worth taking into account. It gave me the understanding that those studies were still in the sightings phase. One of the rules on credibility of the contacts depended in large part on the conditions under which the sighting was reported, and always on whether there were two or more witnesses. However, after conscientiously analyzing a case, one runs into opposition with conformance to the established theories, creating with this an uncertainty on whether the witnesses were sober or not at the time of seeing what they reported they saw. After much thinking on this, I became disillusioned. How could I say that an extraterrestrial woman had invited me to travel in her ship and that she had shown me how much damage man was doing to his own self? How could I explain that humanity constituted a threat to its own self, and that this had been shown demonstrated to me by a beautiful woman who lived on a world called Inkstria or Enstria? If the scientists scarcely analyzed the light of those photographs and movies that had been taken of what had appeared as mysterious lights, and had not studied them under a microscope and in a computer, how could they explain that the business was not much more serious than a simul light in the sky? Sometimes I was totally convinced that nobody would ever believe me. I had read that when a UFO was totally identified as a form of plasma, the witness was considered truthful. If the scientists then agreed with this, that was given absolute credit. But my experience could not be investigated through any terrestrial parameter. Why? With what analogs situation could I compare it? I knew it would be very difficult, and above all for a professor such as I. Considering this, what would be my next step? I was of the opinion that my case concerning the experiences with Lia was managed with the greatest love. Because to take the opposite point of view not only is totally illogical but is absurd. In some manner I had to give to knowledge all that Lia had said. In vain I had looked for someone to offer me the light of an adequate investigation and analysis of my case. Lia had told me one time, almost at the beginning, the incredulity and skepticism shown by the terrestrials has been our principal cover. We knew that we could come and live on the earth confidentially. Nobody would believe in our origin. She knew that all that was said by a contactee would always be placed in doubt. She had also told me, "We have been speaking liberally with your co-terrestrials because we are sure that nobody is going to believe the witnesses." I reflected on the classification they would give me. Perhaps they would call me a lunatic or crazy. Perhaps my students would say that I was delirious, or my children would define my state as senile hallucinations. In the majority of the cases they would simply call me a fanatic. Lia had given me many prophecies, which had come to pass with the passage of time. For example, she had informed me that, in the days to come, the world will be confronting many surprises. After 1984 there will be intense political agitation that will bring very significant changes in all the communist countries. They will be trying to find a solution to the problem of hunger and will seek allies to undertake studies in search of a solution to the scarcity of foodstuffs, but no country will have confidence in them. New systems of espionage will be developed and they will increase their spy nets throughout the world for better communication and to favor new strategies. New personalities will come to political power who will seek in their turn the support of scientists in their eagerness to combat the famine. Also, because in the future the scarcity of grains will make more nations dependent. I thought that if I spoke out on the prophecies of Lia, would they believe that I was a neophyte in predicting the questions of political futures? Once more the uncertainty. Would they believe me? On the other hand, wasn't it necessary that they believe me or that they believe Lia? I have meditated much on this. I would have to write down all that she had told me. Whether anybody wanted to believe me or not, it was within my capacity to try to convince them. Would you like to know something more? Lia had asked me on that occasion. Yes. Who will triumph at the end of a conflagration? You refer to your planet? Well then, if the following conflict at a world level obliges the powers to recruit allies, nobody will survive, not even those tribes who inhabit the most interior parts of Africa. The bacteriological weapons that are being developed today in countries like Vietnam and Afghanistan still do not show the real panorama of their noxious spectrum. Their consequences in the long run will become known later. Moreover, due to the high chemical concentrations that will be utilized in a conflagration, the earth will become barren. Not a single root will survive. And if perhaps some human being would come to save himself, it will be for very little time, because the energy released through the weapons and boops will attract more energy from space. Thus, once the thick gases are concentrated in the stratosphere, gaseous clouds full of energy that circulate in space will be attracted by the energy of their same kind or the affinity of their chemical composition. Something that you do not know is that energy feeds on energy. It is precisely for this that the atom is so dangerous, because it feeds on energy. Very great are the dangers to which man is exposed. If your humanity does not unite and combat these radioactive rains that come from space, and belts of noxious gases that will adhere to the terrestrial atmosphere, nor also to neutralize the enormous power of combustion of the artificial satellites that surround the Earth, as well as to suspend the accumulation of deadly weapons, even for themselves. They will be destroyed by their own hands. Lia sent me to ponder through complete reflection all that I had heard, which at times not even I myself could explain. The why of the liberation of coherent atoms, neutrons, neutrinos, protons, etc. I meditated profoundly on death. Of what significance was it for man to live in the violence and to die for it? Under these circumstances, was it worth being born? With the passage of time I felt totally impotent. I no longer listened to the news. Desperation little by little overpowered me. I continually thought about peace and how to gain it. Could one university teacher change the mentality of the great powers? I was trying to accumulate my will to resist falling into the state of mind that was slowly sinking me into depression. I vowed to myself that someone would come to have access to these pages. I took heart in the illusion that man would understand. I said to myself that man is the only rational being of his expression in the world, and it inspired me to continue until I reached my colleagues through the lofty expression obtained by writing.